This is Brother Michael A. Smith, a voice for Freemasonry, bringing to you the Short Talk Bulletin, published by the Masonic Service Association of North America every month since 1923. This, the Short Talk Bulletin podcast, is produced in cooperation with the MSA and is made possible with the generous support of a grant from the Grand Lodge AFNAM of Minnesota. Volume 81, Number 8, from August of 2003. Islam and Freemasonry. Written by Brother Rex R. Hutchins, Junior Grand Warden of the Grand Lodge of Arizona. The relationship between Freemasonry and political revolution is complex. Certainly, many Masons have been involved in fomenting revolution, the American Revolution being only one example. Latin American Masons, such as Simón Bolívar and Benito Juárez, were also prominent in the revolutions against the Spanish, just as Napoleon Bonaparte was against the Bourbons of France. Such has provided much fodder for the cuds of anti-Masons, and the craft is regularly accused of being a revolutionary organization. Such charges reached their apotheosis in a work by Bernard Fay, a notorious anti-Mason. To a certain extent, Masonry has been revolutionary. As a child of the Enlightenment, Freemasonry has attracted those men whose political ideals tended towards freedom of expression and thus fought against all forms of repression, religious or political. It is important to emphasize, however, that the great majority of these idealists pursued their revolutionary aims as the political individuals they were, not as Masons per se. Nonetheless, Masonry has no reason to be ashamed of its association with these great patriots who sought to free their nations from the yoke of foreign oppression or monarchical despotism. A little-known Islamic revolutionary and Mason was Sayyid Jamal al-Din al-Afghani, who lived from 1838 to 1897. Afghani seems to have come from India and stayed in Egypt, fomenting revolution against the Ottoman rule of Egypt, and warning Egyptians of the imperialist intentions of such European powers as the English, French, and Italians. He resided in Egypt from 1871 until expelled in 1879. The English Masonic historian Robert Freke Gould averred a tradition that Masonry came to Egypt with Napoleon's army in 1798. Certainly, the Grand Orient of France created two lodges in Alexandria around 1806. The creation of many lodges under many jurisdictions proceeded apace after that, and the listener is referred to Gould for the details. Clearly, Afghani saw Freemasonry, at least in part, as an opportunity to further his own political and social agenda. Apparently, he taught for a while at Al-Zahar University in Cairo, but his political and possibly religious views soon reduced him to private meetings with students at his home. Afghani joined several lodges of various jurisdictions, but little record of his actual Masonic work exists. His political activities, which offended other members who wished to exclude politics from their lodges, resulted in him forming his own under the jurisdiction of the French Grand Orient. This lodge soon grew to over 300 members, which included influential politicians and army officers, as well as intellectuals and journalists. The resistance to the political exploitation of Freemasonry angered Afghani, who declared that he was shocked to find cowardice, selfishness, and egotism within the fraternity. He had expected Masons to use their working tools for building places of true freedom, brotherliness, and equality, while destroying the towering edifices of injustice, tyranny, and oppression. It must be admitted that such language echoes other Masonic writers, particularly Albert Pike. Afghani's design of using Freemasonry as a conduit to the higher social circles that might be favorable to the overthrow of the Ottoman rule of Egypt was no doubt bred from his understanding of European Masonry. He must have known, for example, that certain Italian lodges in Egypt were tolerating members who were conspiring to overthrow the Italian monarchs. To some extent, his activities may have borne fruit, for the Khedive Ismail was deposed in 1879. However, his replacement, Khedive Tawfiq, in turn expelled al-Afghani from Egypt. It is interesting to note that both Afghani and Tawfiq were members of Star of the East Lodge No. 1355 under the jurisdiction of the United Grand Lodge of England. Afghani had been installed as master of Star of the East Lodge in January of 1878. While not exactly friends, Tawfiq and Afghani had good relations until Tawfiq's accession as Khedive. From then on, Afghani's progressive political program threatened both Tawfiq's rule and British influence. The events in Egypt at this time bring into sharp focus the latent contradiction in Masonry of our obligation to be peaceable citizens and yet support certain basic rights of man. Another example of an Arab patriot, Abd el-Qadir, the tolerant hero, who was also a Freemason, may be found in the June 1992 issue of the Philalethes, page 74. In the same issue, Wallace MacLeod notes that the first non-English Mason in India was a Muslim prince, Amrat ul Amra. The general experience of Muslim nations has been that Freemasonry is a part of European colonialism, and the demonstrable political activities of certain lodges in certain places and times have injured the reputation of the fraternity in many third world countries. At present, the only nations with a substantial Muslim population that also demonstrate a Masonic presence are Russia, Turkey, and India. Russia's reintroduction of Freemasonry is new, and there are only 21 lodges in a very large country. The Grand Lodges of Turkey, 177 lodges, and India, 328 lodges, however, are flourishing. No discussion of Islam and Freemasonry can ignore the distinctive anti-Masonic cant in much of the Muslim world. This is not new. Even the redoubtable Sir Richard F. Burton, speaking of the great port city of Karachi, then India, now Pakistan, tells us, quote, "There is even reform and repair in the uncanny-looking yellow and white building of the old Freemasons Lodge, accommodating some 9 different items, for which I must refer you to handbooks. The natives will call it Jadugav, or Sorcery House. The vulgar estimate of the respectable order is that we represent a band of sorcerers, who meet in the Philadelphian, House of Brotherhood, to worship the Shaitan, the horned man in the smoky house, and to concert diabolical projects against the chosen people of Allah, Muslims, themselves. The more learned Oriental believes the mystic craft to be a relic of monotheism, embedded in the modern structure of Christianity. It is the fashion, I may observe, with Muslim freethinkers to hold the Emperor Aurelian's opinion that, among all the gods, none is truly worthy of adoration but the sun." End of quote. An interesting anecdote can be found in the Transactions of Kator Coronati, the premier lodge of research in England. It suggests the possibility of Freemasonry in Afghanistan prior to any European penetration. Once one gets past the anti-Semitic cant of the note, there is interesting material, though the writer confuses the capital of Afghanistan, Kabul, with the Kabul, meaning desolate, of the Bible. See 1 Kings chapter 9, verse 13. The meager place of Masonry in the Islamic world today may be traced to several sources. Among them is the prevalence of what is commonly termed Islamic fundamentalism. This has discouraged organizations that teach or imply any equivalence of religions. Masonry is seen as doing this by not having a specific religious test beyond eschewing atheism and by having members of diverse religious backgrounds meeting on the level. As well, it may be noted that lodges often mirrored the colonial oppression of European nations such as England, France, and Italy. These countries did much to both help and hinder cultural development in the Middle East and South Asia. The success of Masonry in Turkey and India requires some comment. The reforms in Turkey of Kemal Atatürk in the 1920s turned Turkey away from the Middle East and toward Europe. His adoption of the Roman alphabet for the Turkish language is but one of his striking reforms. The toleration, if not encouragement, of Freemasonry was also a deviation from common practice in the Middle East, and certainly helped to reinforce the connection between Turkey and Europe. Anyone interested in the relationship between Freemasons and the Ottoman Empire should consult the excellent article by Peter Menzel in the recently published Freemasonry on Both Sides of the Atlantic, The Ottoman Grand Orient, Freemasonry, Nationalism, and Revolution in the Late Ottoman Empire. In India, there was more toleration for the admission of natives into Masonic lodges. Kipling's famous claim that he was initiated by a Hindu, passed by a Mohammedan, and raised by an Englishman, though not borne out by the extant records of Hope and Perseverance Lodge No. 782, certainly expresses the cultural diversity to be found in the lodges of British India. In summary, it must be observed that the history of questionable political activities of some European Masons unduly influenced both action and attitude within the Muslim world. Some Muslim Masons engaged in political activity that American Masons would condemn and European Masons should. Those activities have sullied the reputation of the craft in general among Muslims and make understandable the absence of lodges in those countries. This is Brother Michael A. Smith, a voice for Freemasonry, and this has been the Short Talk Bulletin Podcast, produced in cooperation with the Masonic Service Association of North America for the purpose of providing a common stock of vetted Masonic information to all of the constituent lodges of all of the member jurisdictions, and is made possible through a generous grant from the Grand Lodge AFNAM of Minnesota, who have been engaging and inspiring good men who believe in a supreme being to live according to the Masonic tenets of brotherly love, relief, and truth since 1853.